It's fine. He's got the bigger army after all. He deserves it. So in order for us to continue deserving our city-state, we must keep subjugating it. What is a child, right? I'm having a hard time not filing this under the F around and find out bucket. Philosophers.
Philosophers.
All right, David, what are we talking about today?
We're going to try to answer a question. What is violence?
Violence. Violence. What is violence? Well, I mean, this should be...
a musical instrument.
It is an instrument, yes.
Do instruments of torture count?
So, I mean, I feel like this is one of those things that most people probably, if they were asked what is violence, they'd have a pretty good idea in their head, but may have a hard time putting it into words, right?
It's one of those things, you know it when you see it.
It is one of those
Except
things.
Except that it isn't, because we all disagree.
Right. So, I have some sources. I got some sauces we're going to try.
Ooh, sauces.
Yes. So, let's start with your favorite dictionary, the American Heritage Dictionary.
Excellent choice.
There's only three definitions of violence. Interesting. So the first definition of violence is behavior or treatment in which physical force is exerted for the purposes of causing damage or injury. So I think this is probably the one that you know it when you
literally
see
it. Attacking somebody. Yeah.
Right. The second has two sub-definitions. So it's 2A and 2B. 2A is the intense force or great power, as in natural phenomena, the violence of a tornado.
Mm-hmm.
And 2B, which is extreme or powerful emotion or expressions, the violence of their tirades. And then there's a third definition, which I did not expect at all, that says the distortion of meaning or intent.
Example sentence?
Do violence to a text.
Okay. Well, okay, that's the same. Okay. That has parallels to, like, butchering the pronunciation of something, right?
Mm-hmm.
We use violent and gruesome language to describe a academic thing, basically.
Right. You know, okay, quick tangent about that. I think there's something very interesting about us doing that as people. It's almost as though we're using words that have specific meanings, but also have like an emotion they're probably going to invoke when mm-hmm. they're used. And we're using them more for the emotion invoked than its actual definition.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. If you butcher the pronunciation of something, well, you did not chop it up into several cuts of meat.
Right.
To be sold, right?
Yeah.
Which is what butchering is.
Right. But to say I butchered text versus you misquoted right. the text, or you misrepresented
right,
the
but
text.
Yeah, you broke it into pieces or like destroyed it beyond recognition, right?
Right. But it means more when you said you butchered it.
Right.
Like,
because it evokes imagery of big knives and blood. Yeah.
Right. That's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I also went ahead and pulled up the Wikipedia, not Wiktionary, the Wikipedia article on violence. And let's see how this one pans in comparison. Violence is the use of physical force to cause harm to people, animals, or property, such as pain, injury, death, damage, or destruction. Some definitions are somewhat broader, such as the World Health Organization's definition of violence as the intentional use of physical force or power, threatened or actual, against oneself, another person, or against a group or community, which either results in or has a high likelihood of resulting in injury, death, psychological harm, maldevelopment, or deprivation. That's a weirdly specific, vague definition. Like, there's a lot of very specific things mentioned in a very vague way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something about that. I definitely think this word is one of those things, like you'd put it originally, is you know it when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's how the word gets used very often. Like, violence is in the eyes of the witness, you know?
It's violence is almost an emotion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really, but it kind of is, right? Like, okay. We make games of throwing things, for instance.
Right.
Right? The shot put, javelin throw, right? Things like that. We have games about it, just challenges of how far can you throw the thing or how precisely can you throw the thing or whatever.
The yeet sports, if you will.
Right. But if I just pick up a chair and throw it across the room, that's violence.
That is actually like one of the most catalyzing violent acts a person can do.
Right.
Yeah. Like, weirdly specifically, there's a whole Boondocks episode about that. If you've not seen that, I don't know if that's what you were referencing.
No, it isn't, but now I need to go look that up.
It's pretty good. There's a moment where I think it's Riley, one of the young boys, is like, man, you know, if they're trying to organize like an actual fight, and he was saying that, well, if it ends up being a dud, I'll just throw a chair and then it'll go down. Like, and that's what ends up happening mm-hmm. in the episode. Spoiler alert, is he yeets a folding chair and then just absolute brawl breaks out, because apparently that's like a human rule. if a chair is thrown, a brawl will ensue. I guess we've answered the question, what is violence, technically speaking? But maybe the whole point of this episode also has something to do with, why does it matter? Why does the definition of violence matter so much?
Well, so usually our rules that we place on within and upon society is to minimize or eliminate violence, right? Mm-hmm. We decided violence is bad because it is somehow illegitimate, I guess, most of the time. You know, we would prefer that people negotiate and make fair dealings with one another rather than resorting to violence. But also, as a consequence of violence being broadly prohibited under the law, violence is also usually the exception that permits other people to do violence, right? The classic example, of course, self-defense, right? It is illegal to attack someone, but if they attack you first, then you can retaliate to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if someone damages your property, then, okay, you're still not supposed to commit violence back against them, but you still kind of do by way of the state.
Yeah.
Right. We think it's okay for special people with uniforms and badges to lock those people up and punish them for what they did to your stuff.
Well, and arguably, I've heard it said that the mark of a state, like what separates a state from a gang, is whether or not they hold the monopoly on violence.
Right.
Like, so violence is one of the things
right.
that we
use.
Right.
The state is the gang that tells you it's not okay to fight.
Right. Or yeah, and to say it's wrong for anyone else to use violence but me, and mm-hmm. then I'm going to use my violence to make sure no one else does until people stop being violent at each other, and then I'm the only one who holds the right to do mm-hmm. so. Which is a weird thing to think about, that's the barometer by which we set what makes a state a recognizable right. state.
The bully of all bullies, yes.
Yes, and within a certain geographical area.
Yes.
If biggest kid on the block is the king, mm-hmm. if you will. I feel like the reason we kind of got to the point of preferring other things to violence has to do with just the distribution of like how this all works out. Like, I forget what this is called, but there have been experiments done where they will ask people, you know, I assume you're a third party, right, to this question. Would you rather live in a society like where, you know, would you rather go into a situation in which there is a fight, not knowing which person you're going to be, the person committing the violent act or the person subject to the violent act? You know, there's a 50-50 chance. Or would you rather live in an area in which there's a third person who has the ability to commit violent acts, but all other members of the group won't commit violent acts because of the one person, and you don't know which one you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I forget what this series of experiments is called, but essentially you just strip out people specifics, and then you just create these situations and say, not knowing which of these people you'll be in, and you only give people the opportunity to know the proportions, they then get to get pick which they would rather have. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the classic version of this is, and this is used by people to point out like wealth disparity. Would you rather live in a society in which everyone is equally wealthy, or would you rather live in a society in which one person holds 90% of the wealth? You know, a group of 100 people each have 10 wealth, but, or each have one wealth, or yeah, a group of 10 people of which each has 10 wealth, or a group of 100 people where one person has 100 wealth and everyone else has one wealth, or something like that. Like, I forget the exact, mm-hmm. you know, and we all would want to be the guy with 100 wealth, you know, but not knowing which person we would be, we often will choose down. We'll choose whichever minimizes the risk of the negative outcome. It's like, it's kind of like the prisoner's dilemma.
I was going to say, it's very prisoner's dilemma-esque. Yeah.
Right. And I think violence is, our view on violence is very much so informed from that, where I don't know, I imagine most people would think of themselves as being bad at violence, or even if you're good at it, you can still lose an eye, right? You can still be injured.
Yeah, fighting is dangerous, but also, yeah, I think there's, well, yeah, even if you are good at fighting, you can get hurt, but also you're probably not the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. People understand that even if you're not at the bottom of the hierarchy of people who can pick on one another, you're probably not at the top either.
Right. So I would rather not the violence. But I feel like most people...
Well, and also, I think we also... humans have a very strong natural intuition of what they think is fair. And I think that is really what informs it, is that we understand very intuitively that it's not fair for someone to be able to just do whatever they want because they're stronger.
Are you sure? I mean, I would like to agree with you, but I also feel like for the vast majority of human history, that was kind of the person who got to be in charge.
It was, but that's because we didn't have guns to do anything about it or whatever else, right? Or at least people weren't cooperative enough to decide, okay, we're all going to get together and fight the bully, right?
Sure. But even within like a military arrangement, often the guy who's in charge is not the biggest warrior in that case.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a bunch of other warriors that are strong though, but they all listen to him, or I guess maybe her anyway,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's because they can command violence, like, as opposed to being able to commit it themselves.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that doesn't change the feelings of the people who are being subjected to the violence, though.
Maybe not.
I doubt that the people who are getting stepped on by warlords are thinking, wow, it's really, you know, this is fine. It's fine. He's got the bigger army after all. He deserves it. Right? Like, no, they're not, they don't enjoy what's happening to them. They just don't feel like they can do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe, you know, it's such as the case is that because these were the people in charge, maybe they propagated myths about how power deserves it as a means of, like, justifying it after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I like looking, like, I think whenever people are asked to think about a very militant society, one that often comes up is, like, Sparta in ancient Greece, they glorified the fact that they were absolutely violent, like, to the point where they viewed themselves as occupiers,
right,
for their entire history, even after they'd been there.
It was part of their core
mythos.
Yes, we are an occupying force in foreign territory. Yeah, even though they were long established and it was definitely their territory.
Hundreds of years after the fact. No, we're still just, this isn't ours. We're still holding it though. And we could lose it at any moment to the slaves that we have, because there are more of them than there are of us. But we deserve it because we subjugate them. So in order for us to continue deserving our city state, we must keep subjugating it. And so they built in their societal structure into they justified the way their society was from, like, a means of survival. And I guess maybe that's an interesting appeal, because that's, I think, one appeal that most people would put above violence is, you know, most people would choose to live in a tyrannical dictatorship than abject survival, you know, because they do. Like,
right. Yeah. That this is the reason why dictatorships can exist, because if people would rather take the option of abject survival, then they just would, because that's a very easy option to take.
Yeah. You can leave like that. I think dictators preventing people from leaving is a relatively new thing. I could be wrong about that. But I do feel like for a lot of human history, most people were like, yeah, there's a despot, but it's a living. What can you do?
It beats living in the wilderness, though. Yeah.
Or living under other despot in place right. where I wasn't born. So right. all things equal, everybody's ruled by despots. I'll just stay where the despot is, mm-hmm. you know, or I can go to Athens where they have a democracy where I'm going to be a slave, you know,
right.
which is worse, you know, that's interesting. I don't know. That's all I have in this tangent. I don't want to go back to the core premise.
Okay.
So violence, why does it matter? I think one reason we'd already said is that it's used as a barometer for who gets to be the state. So, but that also kind of gets to say, if the state considers something to be violent, they then get to also claim a monopoly on it. That's an interesting kind of weird consequence of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also I think, much like using the word violence or using violent vocabulary, like butchering a phrase, we can use the word violence to evoke other things that we don't like and try to get them treated the same way as violence. And I think that's a lot of what's happening. You know, I feel like most things, most folks that advocate for forms of censorship also share the belief that words can be violent, and not in the way that I used them in the definition earlier, where I can, well, of course, yeah, there can be violent terminology like butchering a phrase. That's not what they mean. They mean that they can cause harm. And I think for the sake of the
right,
rest,
and they warrant retaliation with physical force.
Right. And so I think for the remainder of the discussion, it might be fine for us to say that violence is harm causing, you know, or immoral harm causing, for the sake of the rest okay. of the discussion. Because I think the rest of the things we're going to end up discussing, when we use the word violence, or when we're talking about how people may look at something, whether it is or isn't violence, what they're meaning to say is this is an intentional cause of harm.
Yeah.
So, I don't like that. I do not think that ideas and speech inherently is violence. I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think there's something to be said about, but that being said, I do find it difficult to disagree that it doesn't cause any harm, but we have to get into the discussion about what harm is. I tend to think that physical harm is the primary type of harm we need to care about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like physically restraining people, physically forcing people to do something, harming them physically as a motivator. And while psychological harm is, I think, something that we can think about, I do think there needs to be a different standard for psychological harm, because unlike physical harm, psychological harm is a lot more subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say a lot more, I mean that, you know, because even physical harm is subjective, you know. I think like pain tolerances are different, for example, right? Like, I was a teenage boy at one point in my life where I would punch my friends for fun and they would punch me back for fun. And that is violence, but it was not the same as me punching a 5-year-old, like,
right.
Different, you know, intentionally going out of my way and at full gas punching someone who is, most people would weigh out to be weaker than me. It's not the same. You know, and we don't even treat it the same way. Like, if a kid runs up and starts, like, you know, beating their fists against your shins, I mean, you know.
Or even amongst your friends, right? I imagine when you say, okay, we used to punch each other, I imagine you're punching each other in the arm, right?
Yeah, stuff like that.
That's the place you punch someone if you just want to get their attention, right? You want to, you want to give them a nice little jolt, but you're not actually trying to injure them.
No.
As opposed to if you just clock somebody in the head, right? That would be a lot more serious.
Sure. But even then, like, we did box as well. That's the same. And I was...
But that's like an arranged fight, though, yeah.
Sure, but we were still intentionally causing harm to each other. Mm-hmm. Like, bloody noses ensued, and even punching in arms, like, bruises ensued. But that's not the same. It you know, like I said, is like me punching a five-year-old. Or if a five-year-old runs up to me and hits me and intends to hurt me as much as they possibly can, and they just, like, smack my shins with their little tiny fists. It's like, ooh, you're so big, you're so strong, you know, like... whatever.
Right.
I think at certain levels, there's no way I can deliver a proportionate response, really, because I'm just not capable of inflicting that little amount of damage on them. Not because I'm...
I mean, I guess you could, like, thump them in the forehead with your finger, but...
Maybe. But but here's the thing. There's a huge disparity both in the ability of damage we're able to take before it's, quote, significant, and our... the range of damage we're able to deliver. Like, mm-hmm. the bottom end of the range of damage I'm able to deliver may actually, when contextualized with their absolute tiny threshold for maximum, for, you know, upper end of actual harm, it may actually not be, you know, me picking them up as maybe as violent as I can get. Because, you know, putting my hands around them and picking them up to eye level, right? Mm-hmm. If I thump them on the forehead, that might be enough to cause them to cry out of pain, mm-hmm. you know, in a way that them hitting me as hard as they can on my shins would never cause me to cry out in pain, as though they had, like, maybe bit me or something. You know what I mean? So that being said, though, I think the thresholds of what of the capacity to do damage and the capacity to endure damage are a lot more intuitively understandable by people. Like, I think nobody would look at my, like a two-year-old punching me in the shins and look at that as, oh my goodness, like, is that guy going to be okay? Like literally nobody would look at me and wonder and if I'm going to be okay or not, you know? Mm-hmm. But our ability to measure psychological harm is a lot less intuitive. Because I think it's not as obvious, you know? Like, if you could just
Yeah, because it's purely subjective.
Right. Like, and we usually can't tell except for the external signs of that damage, right? Like, you can tell how bad a cut is by how much it bleeds, usually. But how can you tell how bad a psychological trauma someone was in? Mm-hmm. I know the gut reaction, a lot of people say, well, what about crying?
Right, that's one signal.
That is one signal, but not everybody cries. Mm-hmm. But everybody bleeds, you know? And not everybody cries over the same thing. I could tell that two-year-old, you're a doo-doo head, and they will weep. Because right,
that's the worst thing they've ever been called by somebody.
I have destroyed their self-worth in a mm-hmm. moment, you know. But David, if I called you a doo-doo head and you started to cry, I would wonder what's wrong with you. Like right. I'm not the problem, you know. But third-party observer, not hearing what we say to each other, only sees me mouth, and then you start to weep. They're going to be like, whoa, what did he say?
You say? Yeah.
Not, man, how weak is this guy? It's always, right. we err to the side of the aggressor to say, well, what did you do? Like how could you have done this? Like, you know. So to me, I think, like, what can be done about that? Because at some point, I feel like you have to say, okay, we just need to establish a floor for this. And if you're below this floor, it's your responsibility to, like, get with the program. You know, you are too weak for society. You need to build some psychological resilience, in my opinion.
Well, we have a system for this.
Oh, we do?
A jury of your peers to decide.
Oh, God. Fortunately, 12 of my peers would have to agree that I was too harsh. All it takes is one to be like, no, that other person's
that guy is just a weenie. Yeah,
he's a weenie. Like, but still, I don't know. Like, I guess that's as good as you can do, because it's not really, without hooking, I guess, brainwave monitoring stuff up to every single person, could you actually
But even
tell?
Then, we can't, like, make them live through that exact moment again, right?
No.
Like, now you're in a lab setting.
Yeah. I guess the point is, I do like the jury thing better than at least the default response that a lot of people give is like, well, it depends on how much damage was done. It's like, well, I am in no way in control of half of the equation to determine the amount of damage done. It is a multiple.
And that person has all the ability to just lie and send false signals about how much damage was done.
Right. Now, to be fair, I do think at least most people also, in our fairness center of the brain, perfidy, i.e. lying about things and or faking it, that triggers pretty deep in the psyche of things that we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. You know?
And yet,
people still do it.
And yet, the Salem witch trials happened, so...
Oh boy.
Which was just...
Weren't that true. Did any of the people... Did they ever discover at the time that it was all bupkis?
Yes, they did.
What happened to the people that did the bupkising?
They were such nobodies outside of the whole thing that they really kind of just disappeared from the historical record and nobody knows anymore what happened.
The people that made everything up?
Yeah.
That's horrible.
They just disappeared from the records. No one cared about them after that.
Oh, man.
People cared that there were some crazy witch trials going on, and then after all that was over, that's it.
Hmm. All right, question. What should the penalty, if you were the supreme commander of everything, what would you put the penalty of false accusations of violence? We'll say assault. You know, like just regular old,
I think this opens up a bigger tangent. What should the punishment be for false accusations of anything?
I think it should be proportional to the thing that the person was accused of.
Well, or proportional to what that person's punishment would be if found guilty.
That's what I mean. Yeah. I agree. That's what I think it should be.
Yeah, I think you should face the same sentence.
Now, I have heard people argue against this, and I think there is a decent argument to be made about this, right? The capacity to convict is so difficult,
yes,
that the opposite is too easy. I don't think, you know... But to that being said, I think you should be able to counter, you know, like, for example, someone says that I beat them up.
Mm-hmm.
So the punishment for me beating them up is, say, like two to four years in jail, tops, and a big fine, right? So I would have to go to trial first.
Right. We're going to decide if you did it.
Right. Or if I'm guilty of that or not. If I am found not guilty, that then can open up a second
prosecution, mm-hmm, for a false accusation, and right, we still have to prove that they falsely accused, right? Yeah,
right. Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I'd be okay with that, because they would get the same opportunity that I got during my trial to say, like, all it takes is one person to say no, I don't think they actually meant to do that, you know. And I don't think that would stop too many people from seeking justice in that way. Mm-hmm. And it offers a way out. I do think, what about the cost and time? Because now I just got done paying for a bunch of lawyers to not go to jail. Do I really want to pay for a bunch of... Well, that's the other question.
It should be criminal.
That's a good point.
It should not come out of your pocket again.
That's a good point. But what if the prosecutor is unwilling to... Because this happens a lot.
This is like a whole different episode about prosecutors.
I think we had an episode on prosecutorial discretion before.
Maybe. I don't think it was an actual episode topic, but we probably talked about it before, yeah.
I'm good to go down the tangent for a moment, at least.
Okay, sure.
Because I don't know that we can make a full hour out of prosecutorial discretion beyond just saying that it's absolute BS.
Yes.
Because the reason I think we discussed it before is because my opinion should be that the prosecutors should be like judges in the way that you're compelled to do your duty.
Mm-hmm.
If a crime is committed or some evidence of crime is put in front of you, you must take it to trial.
Right.
Period.
Now, maybe in cases of like obviously frivolous accusations, the judge should be able to just throw it out, right?
Exactly. The prosecutor has to take it to trial, and the judge can dismiss the case for lack of evidence.
Right.
And that should be fine. And I hear people saying, well, what about my double jeopardy, right? Like, that's fine. We're not saying that you're not guilty. You're not going to trial at all.
Right.
There's a difference. Like, if if I was brought up on charges...
you can be prosecuted multiple times, but as soon as a jury finds you not guilty, now you're immune.
From that claim, yes.
Right.
Exactly. So, yeah, I agree. I think that would be perfect. Like, you at least need to get the judge to agree, yeah, this is not... There's not enough evidence to pursue this case.
But, yes, yeah. Basically, if someone makes an accusation, the prosecutor should have to pursue it.
Yeah, if I go to the police and file a police report saying this person did this, it should be treated the same as every other police
report. Yeah.
The police should investigate it. If they yield some evidence,
they bring that to the prosecutor.
Yep.
And that's brought before a judge. And then we decide if there's going to be a real trial or not. Yeah.
Which, don't get me wrong, this just kicks the can down to law enforcement. Law enforcement can only investigate as hard as they want to, which that's been a problem. But, you know, you would, I don't even know how you would go about that, like proving that law enforcement didn't investigate hard enough. But to be fair, law enforcement are not the only ones that can bring evidence to the prosecutor.
Right.
You can hire your own investigator.
If I have my own investigator, yeah, or if I have my own evidence anyway, right?
I can supply it directly to the prosecutor, yeah. So I think that works. I'd be okay with that. Cool. Tangent over. but the point that tangent resumed. The point that prosecutors don't have to do that is absolutely ludicrous in my mind. I actually don't know why we made it this way. I guess it was the frivolousness of it, I guess. But I believe that all agents of the state should do their duty to the fullest of their extent.
And I think probably like many other things in the court, it's a matter of priority, right? It's the discretion to decide what criminal accusations are serious enough to warrant the court's time today.
Not my problem. I mean, I pay taxes for this. If I'm going to get it, it better be everything. And, or we should start changing the laws to seriously.
Yeah, I think that's the answer, is that if we have so many frivolous accusations of stuff that it's clogging up the prosecutor's schedule, maybe this stuff shouldn't be illegal. It's clearly not serious enough if we're not willing to pursue it in court.
Yeah. My problem is when it's normally not serious enough to pursue until it is. Like, that's the stuff that grinds my gears. Like, I don't like it that traffic cops can just decide not to give tickets to most people, but the moment it's me, I get a ticket. Ooh, screw you. Like, we wouldn't have all these traffic laws if everybody always got tickets for everything. We would all be like, okay, look, on paper, yes, we thought that this was a good idea, but in practice, no one's doing it anyway. We need to raise the speed limit because everybody drives 45, whatever. It doesn't matter what some traffic commissioner said was safe or not. Doesn't matter. What do the people think? The people
right.
think
it's... What's the actual safe speed limit? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, totally agree.
Because the whole point of it is to punish people for being unsafe. Yeah.
Right. Whereas if most people are doing it safely, and we know they are because they did it and then got caught for breaking it safely, like, you know, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
Ooh.
Okay. Tangent can end now. So let's get into the reason we even discussed this episode in the first place, right? Protests.
Yes. Are protests violent?
They can be.
Well, they certainly can be.
Yep. Riots are violent.
Riots. I mean, arguably, a revolution is a type of protest.
True.
We decided, and we're taking it to the king, yeah, or whatever.
Yeah, we're taking it to the man with weapons.
Right. Guillotines.
Right. But what about just... I guess a note about protests. We have gone on record saying that most protesting is just public whining.
Yes.
Public organized whining. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with organizing and whining. As to the effectiveness of that whining, your mileage may vary. I do think that you can try to be very annoying. So, for example, I think most people are fine with about 30 people on the side of the road holding signs. No one cares. Do that all you want. To the point of the protesters, is that very effective?
Not really.
Not really. You know what is effective to getting people to talk about you, though?
Blocking roads.
Blocking that road. Ooh. All right. Well.
Now you've interfered with me in my daily life.
Yes. You've interfered with me in my daily life, and to your point, it does make me know more about your cause. I've noticed you now. But at what point can I just make you move myself? At what point should the authorities be able to make you move? I think I am not an authoritarian lover by any means.
No.
But I'm consistent. Blocking roads is a crime.
Right.
Go to jail. Like, if you believe in your cause, it's worth it. Do it anyway. But make them go to jail. I do not understand how these things can even happen. I really don't. Like, I do not get why them on the side of the road, fine, everyone agrees. But the moment they break the law, how do these protests last for any period of time before law enforcement shows up and haul these people out of the street?
Mm-hmm.
Even worse, say I get out of my car and move you out of the street, I can somehow then get arrested.
Right, that's assault.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Why is it that law and order doesn't apply while they're, quote, unquote, peacefully protesting, i.e. blocking a street, but the moment I go to peacefully unblock the street, I'm all of a sudden a criminal? Like, pick a lane. Like, I you know, either we can have these kinds of protests, but people are allowed to resolve the disputes themselves as the public, or
you're not allowed to break the law while you're doing a protest.
Which is probably what it should have been in the freaking first place.
Like, well, right, because the reason it's illegal is because we decided that nobody should be able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And it also almost always entirely depends on how many people you have, too. Mm-hmm. Like, if I just go stand in the middle of the road, I'm going to jail.
You're going to jail.
Yeah, but all of a sudden...
But if you get, like, 10 of your friends...
Honestly, I feel like there's optics involved here. If 10 of my friends go out there without signs and just dress like normal people and just block a road, I feel
you're
like...
also all going to jail.
Yeah, but yeah. The moment...
But if you have signs,
yeah,
it's a protest.
Exactly. And don't get me wrong, I do, on the one hand, appreciate that we're so hesitant to clog up the freedom of speech that we're willing to let people commit crimes as long as they're talking.
Mm-hmm.
But what? Like, excuse... No, like, that's not consistent either. Like, I can peacefully... Like, I am more likely to get arrested for something I'm saying on the side of the road by myself than I am with a group of 30 people dressed like a protester with a sign in the middle of a road. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely backwards. Do not appreciate it. So the instance we're talking about, a good Samaritan finally... I won't pass judgment on this person in the positive or the negative. A gentleman decided that he had had enough with these protests. So he gets out of his car, armed, approaches the protesters, and instructs them to move. They did not. He asked to speak to the person in charge to ask them to move. They did not move. They would not answer him. So he finally just shoots one of them, killing them, and then shoots another who ended up dying later. The protesters scattered. The road was cleared. And he returned to his vehicle.
Mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished. We can go home now. And I've heard a couple of interesting takes about this. Most people universally agree that what he did was murder.
Murder, yeah.
And you know what? They're right.
Yeah.
That was absolute cold-blooded murder. But most people also agree that it's kind of surprising this hasn't happened yet.
Like, yeah, surprising this is the first time.
It took this long. Because we've had a couple close calls. We've had people get run over by cars,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not die from it. And pushed out of the way by cars. But this is the first time someone's come up and actually done something about it. Is there any way in which, though, he was justified in doing that? Or would he have been justified if he hadn't have shot them, but, like, ran them off with a pointy stick? You know? Were they doing some violence by blocking the road? I await your take. If it helps, imagine yourself... You have an appointment to make. And you're a very punctual person. And you have an appointment to make. But there's just some hooligan in the middle of the road preventing you from making an appointment. And this hooligan's been there every day for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Weeks. Every time you need to travel, you have to wait for hours in the sweltering heat for weeks and weeks. How upset would you be about it on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 to 10.
I don't know. It depends on the importance of the appointment, I guess.
Any appointment across multiple weeks. say that you live in a weird neighborhood where there's only one road that goes in and out of the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So anytime you leave your home, you have to wait for this thing to get out of your way. You know, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that take the weeks of cumulative anger and aggression and impact negative on your life and compare that to a moment of someone just hitting you in the face once.
Mm-hmm.
How do they weigh out for you? Like, if I were to give you the choice right now, I'm going to go lay in your driveway and prevent you from leaving for a month. I'm going to delay whatever you want to do by a few hours, as long as you cross this barrier. Or I can just hit you in the face one time. Which would you prefer? You know, like, or which one? And I think the answer to which one you prefer would say which one is more damaging to you.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
But the fact that it's a difficult thing to weigh out, it says a lot to me, mm-hmm. you know.
That is very annoying.
By all the definitions we've said today, I don't know that what they were doing qualifies to the letter as violence. They were not using physical force. Well, they were using
using physical force.
To cause harm to people. Harm is the operative thing here.
Right. What is harm? Is inconvenience harm?
I think it can lead to harm.
It could.
You know. But I don't know. I think, ultimately, it's tantamount to some harm, I think. Because harm to people, animals, property, you know, I think you could argue that there are a lot of instances in which it could cause or add to some harm, you know. How many degrees of separation? Don't know, you know. But like, if it makes me, in my daily life, freely moving to facilitate my life the way that I want, if it puts that in jeopardy, you know, that could lead to outcomes that could lead to harm, I think, you know. I don't know. If it is harm, it's a low degree of harm, at least. You know.
Yes.
But man, it is hard to feel bad for those two people that died, to be honest with you. It is. Actually, kind of, I'm having a hard time not filing this under the F around and find out bucket, mm-hmm. you know. Now, do I think the guy still needs to go up for murder charges?
Oh, yes. Yeah. He belongs in prison. Yeah.
He needs to be tried. I'll leave it to his peers to decide whether he belongs in prison. Because I don't know the full circumstance. Again.
I mean, I saw the video footage.
But you didn't see all of the effect that had on the society.
No.
I think if you are annoying enough to your society, if members of that society take drastic action against you to make you stop, it's may not come out the way you think it should. Mm. You know? And that's the contract that we make by participating in society. I suppose so. You know? I'm not a big fan of the ye olde social contracts. I didn't sign no contract. But still, it's doesn't matter. The terms will apply to you whether while you're here, whether you like it or not, even if we want to advocate for that change, you know. So we'll see. If it were me, I would think he deserves to go in jail, not having ever been any a part of that. Although, I will say, if I had been in traffic with him for however long this has been going on, I'd think about it. It wouldn't be as black and white as it would be me sitting here not having had to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've been late to things before. I've had people like doing stupid things on the road rage, you know, and in those moments, it's enough to make me angry enough to think about it, you know. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is a failing, though, of us being able to, you know, facilitate a protest without some consequences. You know, but it's hard, man. I'm not gonna lie. It's tough because I don't appreciate people interrupting the freedoms of other people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sounds like a you problem type thing, you know, and if your arguments are not good enough for me to care, you standing in the road is definitely not going to be good enough for me to care.
I mean, that, yeah. Now we're just getting back into protests, but This is the same thing that we said in the protest episode. It's like, yeah, annoying me is not going to make me sympathetic to your cause, probably.
Right. I also don't think there's like a hard and fast rule we could put around violence to say, yep, this is the line. And we don't do that anyway, right? And at least in the American legal system. So like if you look under self-defense, you don't actually have to be in any real danger to use lethal self-defense.
Right. You just have to feel like you are.
You just have to believe that you are. Yeah. Which is very interesting when you think about it. Well, the law as written says you have to believe that you are. But the reality is that you need to convince 12 other people that you believe that you were.
Reasonably believe that you were.
Yeah. Which is a different thing than just believing it, mm-hmm. unfortunately. You know, like I've heard this a lot, you know. It's a lot harder for like able-bodied young men to claim self-defense than it is those who are elderly or infirm. Because mm-hmm. there's like this weird standard where we assume that if you're able-bodied young male that, oh, well, you shouldn't have felt actually in danger by that. You should have just fought them, you know, like with your fisticuffs. You shouldn't have pulled your gun on them.
What a silly thing.
But it happened.
I know people do think that way, but it's
like we
it's
saw
very silly.
I think the biggest example of that was the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Because he was an able-bodied young man who shot and killed two and injured a third,
I believe.
You know, in self-defense. And it was in self-defense because he's found not guilty. But, you know, a lot of the arguments came out then is, hey, why were you even there? Why were you, you know, why were you even in a troublesome place to begin with, which didn't matter? Why didn't you just push him? You know, why didn't you, like... Hindsight's 2020, you know, there's all these other things you could have done, but you decided to pull the trigger. And so, I don't know. Like, it's a hard thing to convince, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, I guess, I don't know. Like, I don't envy it. I never want to be in that place. I think we've said it a lot, is that you never want to, most people don't ever want to be a part of a violent altercation. Regardless of the side, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it's going to suck if you are, no matter what side you're on, you know, but I don't know that we can come up with a actual standard for violence that's objective. I think that it's just always going to be subjective, and it could be something that we just don't like too. Like, for example, if I threw glitter on you, that's not that violent, but if I threw a bucket of blood on you, well, the damage done to you is roughly the same. You got gunk on you that you don't want. That's impossible to get off.
Virtually, anyway.
No, literally. Glitter is...
Glitter is forever.
It's arts and crafts aids. You know. But like... Or a bucket of water. Let's make it real equivalent. I'm going to have water or blood. One is just way more detestable by people than the other. You know. So... I guess it's just a thing to think about,
mm-hmm.
you know, no matter what you do throughout your daily life, anytime you interact with other people, like, make sure you have a good read, I guess, on what your peers think is violent or not.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we also have plenty of justifications for violence, not just self-defense, but there are a lot, you know. What are your thoughts on the whole fighting words thing?
Nonsense.
You think so?
We're adults here. You should be able to handle what someone else says to you and not be driven to violence.
I agree. And I think as long as whatever 1 in 12 is a percentage. I don't know why I can't come up with that. It's like 8% maybe. As long as 8% of the population also agrees with you, you're probably going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It only takes that one juror. But no, I agree. I definitely agree. Like, words are words, you know. You if you can't handle it, we shouldn't reward people resulting to violent tendencies because they can't handle some words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what about like harassment? Like if someone is consistently bothering you, like
I think that is deserving of force.
You think so?
Lethal force may be questionable, but force, definitely. I think if someone is repeatedly harassing you, it is more than appropriate to either fight them or use like pepper spray or something like that to deliver a message.
Deliver a message.
Yeah, I don't know about lethal force without any more details, but force, yes.
Do you think harassment is tantamount to violence? Not to say that only violence can justify violence. I don't think that's what we're saying necessarily, but
I think it could be considered a form of it, yes.
Okay. Psychological harm or what?
I think it could also be, well, okay, the damage of the harassment itself, yes, that is psychological, it's emotional distress, but I think it can also have a physical component. If it is, you know, someone can use harassment to try to control like where you will go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of a form of physical coercion.
Yeah. I think another one that's very similar is like, what about defamation?
Defamation, not violence.
I think it's depending on the circumstance.
I can see circumstance. Right, okay, libel, right? Publishing a thing about me that is not true and is harmful to my reputation, not violence.
Right.
Worthy of punishment, but not violence. Whereas, as opposed to, like, okay, if we're out in a public place and someone accuses me of, like, a crime, right, that would cause a public outrage against me and cause the crowd to become hostile to me, that is violence. Yes. Yeah.
And I think that kind of also falls into the category of, like, preemptiveness. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, you can't read people's minds and know what they're about to say, but we also don't say an entire thought all at once. That's a serial operation. So if someone starts out by saying, hey, everyone, points at you and says, this guy over here is the worst, whatever, whatever, whatever. They are guilty of doing this horrific thing. And we should all, I think right about that point is when I think I would be more than justified in ceasing that threat, like cutting that person off with violence and making it, because at the very least, now it's just between me and them, right? And there's also this weird thing, too, where we kind of, I think most people feel like lies are, I think we mentioned this earlier, it's one of the most unfair things.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually think most people would be more questioning of what the person said if you were violent towards them than if you weren't. Because we have this whole meme of the guilty conscience.
Yeah, if you're not violent, that must mean that you, are feeling guilty about it, right?
Or shame, yeah.
Right. As opposed to, anyone who is falsely accused would normally feel anger toward that, right?
Yeah. Good luck convincing the police of that ever, because I feel like anytime the police see you being violent over something someone said, they're like, well, if you didn't do anything, then why were you so mad? You know, like, but the police aren't people, so I'm not that worried about it. Yeah. So I think that's tantamount to violence, too. So, and it is arguably the using, it's an attempt to use physical force to harm you, maybe just not their physical force, mm-hmm. but it doesn't say whether it has to be personal or direct violence, because there is a subcategory, there are tons of subcategories in here about violence, you know. With a little bit of time remaining, you want to look at some of these to see if these have any kind of special things that we don't think or do think are violence.
Okay.
So the first one is self-directed violence, which is like suicidal behavior or self-abuse. Interesting, though, there is also... Oh, hold on. Let me read this. Oh, that's parasuicide, which is like suicidal thoughts or attempted suicide. I thought that was like parasuicide meant like you were goading someone else into it, which is a different thing. There's collective violence, which is... Collective violence that is committed to advance a particular social agenda. This includes, for example, crimes of hate committed by organized groups, terrorist acts, and mob violence. So just violence writ large.
Yeah.
Still violence. Although maybe a bit more difficult to litigate because it's hard to pick apart a crowd, you know. There's the ultimate collective violence, warfare.
Mm-hmm. Definitely violent.
Which is also one of the few kinds of violence that if you win, you get away with it.
True.
Interpersonal violence, which is divided into two subcategories, family and intimate partner violence. That is violence largely between family members and intimate partners.
Hopefully. Domestic violence, yeah.
Yeah. Child maltreatment, which is specifically child violence, which includes neglect, which is interesting. That's an interesting one.
That's an interesting one. Okay.
Yeah. Is neglect violence to a child? Let's go back to the original definition here.
Mm-hmm.
Use of physical force to cause harm to people. Is entropy physical force?
Yeah. Is not.
It is a physical force.
Not doing anything. Physical force if it's a child.
Well, it depends on whether you're pro-choice or not, you know? Because that whole, if you were to let things take their natural course argument, don't work out with before they're born. But I guess after they're born, it's totally fine, you know? Mm-hmm. This is a sticky one, because I think we all agree that, like...
neglecting your child is wrong, yeah.
Right. We would all rather you take that child and give it to someone else to be cared for, because we all acknowledge that children are not agents.
Right.
You know? But it's weird to see that.
And I think like that, and like that's the thing. It all comes down to agency, right? Because like, okay, what is a child, right? So like, if you
pets, that's what they are.
If you human pets. If you neglect your 17-year-old, right? Well, they can probably figure out a way to make it on their own, right? They're old enough to know how things work, where they need to go to get food. Like they have learned these things by then. But like a 5-year-old. Not so much.
Well, and like a can't walk year old, like right. Sub year old.
Certainly that. Yeah.
That is an interesting one. I
still don't know that I would call it violence. I think it's wrong in a different way.
Right. I agree. Negligence for sure. Like neglect, negligence.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Irresponsible. But I think it would have to fall under that category. Like, for example,
yeah, it's a failure. We consider it like a failure of duty, not
right. Like if I saw a guy starving to death in an alleyway and didn't feed him and someone found out, I'm not guilty of murder.
Right.
I'm arguably not even guilty of negligent homicide.
No.
But I'm also not in any particular way responsible for that person.
Right. You don't have, society has not assigned you the duty of caring for that person.
Yeah. So a failure to do your duty.
If you were that person's legal guardian, it would be your responsibility. Yes. Right.
Fair enough. There's also youth violence, which is not the same thing, apparently.
That is...
Child violence. Here's the weird thing. Children
fighting each other, I assume is what this is. Or children...
Yeah, it's between youths.
Yeah.
So this includes things like bullying.
Right. Uh-oh. That's a good look on your face.
Yeah. So child maltreatment includes anyone up to the age of 18, right?
Of course.
So it's kind of interesting that let's take the 10-year-old because that's youth,
mm-hmm.
the low end of youth here. 10-year-olds not responsible for their well-being, their guardians are, but somehow are responsible for the acts they commit on other 10-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
It's like civilization.
This is why children break every system.
Yeah. Yeah. They're civilization light, you know? Like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're half people.
This is a really long one, too. I'm not going to read into all this. It's just... but it makes sense. I think that we want to go in there and try to figure out how to solve... Because if you can solve problems of youth violence... problems of youth violence often grow into problems of adult violence.
Yes.
So it makes sense that we would want to stop that. There's specifically intimate partner violence. This is also, I think, kind of an interesting one because there's a weird there's a couple of things in society we put above almost everything else. So for example, I'm married, I have a wife. And unlike everyone else on the earth, she cannot be compelled to testify against me in court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the place where we go to figure out whether or not something bad happened or not, or mm-hmm. you're guilty of it. Yeah, we value the truth above almost all things. So, perfect partner in crime there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting thing about violence within those relationships is that maybe it's almost an acknowledgement that this is a primarily interesting, like, this is a relationship in which the boundaries of what could be considered violence may change in that relationship, you know, without getting into too much. It's just an interesting one to think about, although maybe that's not what they're talking about here. Or maybe it's that it's more particularly egregious because it's an abuse of that relationship. I don't know. Maybe both. There's sexual violence, which I think we all know what that is. It's just violent acts that also happen to involve certain parts of our physiology. Elder maltreatment. So when you return to baby, that's an interesting one, but it makes sense, I guess. I feel like elder maltreatment, child maltreatment, and like the disabled maltreatment all kind of maybe fall in the same thing. People mm-hmm. that require some level of care that they cannot provide themselves, and we don't expect them to provide for themselves. So they're charged to others. So if you were to violate the term of that agreement with some particular form of violence, it's considered extra egregious. Like I said, not only is it violent, but it's like a dereliction or an of duty.
Mm-hmm.
Targeted violence.
Which is violence, but targeted.
Assassination mm-hmm. is the particular one called out here. Again, only wrong if you get caught or you assassinate the wrong person, apparently. And then everyday violence. As an anthropological concept, quote, everyday violence, unquote, may refer to the incorporation of different forms of violence, mainly political violence, into daily practices. Latin America and the Caribbean, the region with the highest murder rate in the world, experienced more than 2.5 murders between 2000 and 2017. That's the whole paragraph under everyday violence.
Cool.
Yeah, I don't know that that deserves its own section. There's also a section here, which I probably should have skipped down to and read, but it wasn't in the overall thing, about philosophical perspectives on violence. It says here, some philosophers have argued that any interpretation of reality is intrinsically violent.
I guess I understand where they're coming from there, right? Because all of our views on what violence is and what we should do about people's behavior comes down to, yeah, an interpretation of the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of us, everyone is prepared to do violence on behalf of their worldview to some level, right? Not that you're willing to do violence on anyone who just disagrees with you about anything, but that everyone who has a worldview that means anything is willing to stand up for it.
Fair. It goes on to say that Slavoj Zizek, in his book Violence, stated that, quote, something violent is the very symbolization of a thing, end quote. An ontological perspective considers the harm inflicted by the very interpretation of the world as a form of violence that is distinct from physical violence, and that is possible to avoid physical violence, whereas some ontological violence is intrinsic to all knowledge. Both Foucault and Arendt, I think that's how you pronounce his name, considered the relationship between power and violence, but concluded that while related, they are distinct. In feminist philosophy, epistemic violence is the act of causing harm by any inability to understand the conversation of others due to ignorance.
What?
Some philosophers think this will harm marginalized groups. Yeah, that's an interesting sentence. The act of causing harm by an inability to understand.
Failing to understand what I'm telling you is your fault and also violence.
That sounds like feminist philosophy to me.
That does sound like feminist philosophy, yeah.
And then Brad Evans states that violence, quote, represents a violation in the very conditions constituting what it means to be a human as such, quote, is always an attack upon a person's dignity, their sense of selfhood, and their future, and, quote, is both an ontological crime and form of political ruination. Interesting. Yeah, I feel like we could go on a whole episode here about what philosophers misuse that word for.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. I feel like philosophers are absolutely the worst at butchering the English language to suit their needs.
Or any language, really. Any,
yeah, true.
This is not exclusive to English.
Yeah, for real. Like, that, man, that is a good point. We need to do an episode about that. Why can't philosophers just say what they mean? Why do they have to hide it behind all of these special words? Why does Jordan Peterson insist that I have to learn about Pinocchio to understand my parenthood? You know what I mean? Why can't we just say what it means? Why does it have to all be hidden in allegory?
All right, I've added to the topic stack philosophers and their stupid words.
Sounds good. Next week.
Next week.
Maybe, or not. We're not beholden to that. On philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.